This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello there. Welcome to the Opinion Booth with myself, Sonia Booth, and yes, Superwoman by Alicia Keys. Very appropriate for today's topic and the title being The White Dress Project. My guests today, Dr. Gary Sudwards and Tanika Gray Valbron. Did I say that correctly? And Audrey Mutari.
Yes.
Hi.
Welcome to Opinion Booth.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Sudwards. An interventional radiologist.
Gary, it's
it's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
And I know you head the fibroid treatment clinic. You, did you also, were you the founder?
Yeah, I founded the fibroid treatment clinic, which I just do one little bit of fibroid treatment. There's a whole array of treatments. There's a whole array of options women have. And we've just taken it upon ourselves to publicize the huge public health issue that is fibroids. So the Fibroid Treatment Clinic is a company, it's a commercial company that I own. But what we do, so we treat fibroids, but a lot of women need treatments that we don't necessarily provide. We just want to make women aware that there's help, that there's a network, that they're not alone, that there are millions and millions and millions of women going through exactly the same thing as they are, but they're not talking about it. So this is our endeavor to partner with White Dress Project to make women aware, to help them in their journey with fibroids.
Okay. And Tanika, you are a CNN content producer.
Yes.
A journalist and founder of the US-based nonprofit organization, The White Dress Project.
Mm-hmm.
We can wear white.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
South Africa. Because I know you only arrived here on Thursday.
Yes.
Did you come here specifically for this?
Yes. I came specifically to meet Dr. Gary and, you know, just partner and meet women in South Africa to figure out if what we've done in the US can be duplicated here.
Okay.
So really excited about being here.
And have you been warmly welcomed
by
our fellow South Africans?
Yes. Yeah. I love South Africa.
Okay, that's, I'm happy to hear. Yes. And Audrey, we're going to be chatting to you a bit later on because you've got an incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I read a little bit about you from Dr. Gary's Facebook post, mm-hmm. and I just could not believe what you've been through. But I know you're going to share that with us later on.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks for joining us, by the way.
Me.
I know you left a very young baby. How?
She's 3 months.
3 months only to be here.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. So, those of you that have read my book, Surviving ICU, know that Dr. Sudwards wrote the foreword. He was a guest on Pumi Mashego's show, War Mandla, last year, and they were discussing fibroid facts. It is for this reason that I chose not to do a repeat by asking the same questions. Anyone wanting to listen to that podcast can download it via the Cliff Central website or app. More info is also available on the Fibroid Treatment Clinic Facebook page.
Yeah, that's right.
Fibroids.co.za.
Yeah, that's right.
The White Dress Project.com.
Yes.
All mm-hmm. right. So, Tanika, you know a woman is confident when she wears white because it is not a forgiving color.
Right.
The White Dress Project, how did the name come about and what is the aim?
So, the White Dress Project's aim is to make women aware of fibroids through education, through outreach events, through storytelling. But once a woman is aware, we are also on a mission to make sure that she is her best health advocate. Obviously, we have doctors and we have family members and researchers, but it's so important to be your own best health advocate. I often tell women that you should go to the doctor armed with questions, ready to, you know, to make sure that you get all your questions answered about your body, because no one is going to be as invested as you are. So the white dress is so significant to me because I suffered with fibroids and I had 27 removed a couple years ago. So it was really traumatic for me. You know, had often experienced heavy bleeding and abdominal bloating. So when I decided to start this organization, I realized that I didn't have any white in my closet, and it was because I had sacrificed my quality of life so much due to the fibroids. So as you rightly said, you know, fibroids, when a woman is wearing white, she feels comfortable and she feels confident. So this organization, I want women to know that even though we have this epidemic, you know, the white symbolizes hope and it symbolizes empowerment, and you can be strong and you can be confident even though we have this epidemic.
Right. So, I mean, you've just mentioned that you had 27 of them removed just 2 years ago. And I mean, 27, this is at one theater session, if I can call it that, during one operation.
Right.
All 27 of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was the size of your tummy?
Oh, I've always been relatively slim, but my belly has always looked like I've, you know, 5 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant. So I was always that young lady that, you know, people would say, so when are you due? You know, so that was always very traumatic to me. And because of that, I never felt comfortable. Sometimes, you know, white or not, I never felt comfortable in clothes because I would always have that protruding belly. So to answer your question, always looking 6 months, 5 months pregnant, and you know that's never complimentary to a woman, you know, you're not pregnant.
I mean, and especially with people congratulating you on a pregnancy, and you don't even know how to react,
right?
And it's actually embarrassing for them because then they're thinking, "Oops, I put my foot in it."
Exactly. And personally, I never ask a woman, unless she says it,
yes,
I never ask, you know, when are you expecting? It's just due to my own personal trauma from it. It's just not something I do. So
I know it's a very personal to you because your mother went through a lot. Please share on that.
She did. My mother lost two sets of twins to fibroids. And, you know, having twins is rare in and of itself, but having two sets, four children lost is just, you know, tragic. So she shared that experience with me very early on. So I was very familiar with fibroids. But as you mentioned, you know, having that experience is something that I'll always live with. You know, I'm an only child, and I always think about those four siblings that my mother lost. And, you know, when you are an only child, you kind of pine, or at least I do, pine for a sibling. So because I don't have that experience, then I, you know, often think about those children that my mother lost to fibroids. But it is with that experience and her sharing that with me that I was familiar with what fibroids were. And through this organization, I've seen that, you know, so many women aren't that fortunate to have had someone to share the experience with them. So a lot of times, you know, they're going through these symptoms and they're not aware of what they are or what's happening with their body. And they kind of just let it, you know, go on and go on and not get any help about it. So because I had my mother's experience, I think it helped me greatly.
You also suffered from something that I had never heard about, called adenomyosis. I mean, it's a mouthful. I have no clue what it is. Obviously, I did Google yesterday when I was preparing for the show. But it just goes to show that a woman like me who's got access to the internet, I mean, access to, you know, well-equipped libraries. So if I have no clue about certain conditions, I'm only just imagining millions of women out there, especially in the rural areas where information is not easily available. So I want you to share your experience about that. And Dr. Gary needs to enlighten us and educate us on that condition.
Do you want to discuss adenomyosis?
Yes, please.
Sure. So adenomyosis is a condition where the lining, so every month the lining of the womb sheds as a period. So that regrows every month and then it sheds and you have a period. What happens in adenomyosis is that the lining actually grows into the muscle of the uterus. So it can't shed. It's still hormonally sensitive, so you still get little bleeds, still swells, incredible pain, horrible periods. The periods are excruciating. We've got patients who are in bed for like a week, a month. They're completely incapacitated. The medication they have to take is severe and that causes all sorts of other problems. And it's long staying. So now the traditional treatments for that would be hormonal control. Eventually, most women land up with a hysterectomy. The interesting thing is the diagnosis of adenomyosis is so much better these days than it used to be. So what we used to do is we used to suspect it. It was hard to see an ultrasound, and you'd land up with a hysterectomy, and then the pathologist would look at it on a slab and say, oh, well, it's adenomyosis. Well, MRI has changed that. Now, most women in South Africa don't have access to MRI. It's very expensive. It's in the, you know, private hospitals. But we're working to make that more available. It is available in public hospitals, obviously at the higher level hospitals. Make that diagnosis. Now you know what you're dealing with. And then you can give it a whole bunch of treatment options, which might be hormonal control or just pain medication, all the way to a procedure that I perform is an embolization, where we inject little tiny particles into the uterus. It kills the adenomyotic cells and one recovers.
I mean, I was amazed yesterday at the fact that one of the patients had a small dot mm-hmm. size,
yeah.
like almost like a, would you say it's like a pin drop size? Or
yeah, just like a pin mark.
On, along the wrist. I mean, Audrey, yeah. so you're showing me that. I mean, I can hardly see that. I mean, this is on the wrist. I mean, you would have to, you know, visit Dr. Gary's website to actually see this, to believe it, because I'm amazed. I mean, it's hardly noticeable. It's just on the inside of your wrist. Because, I mean, as women, I mean, we don't want any scars to be showing. I mean,
no.
we all about appearance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you come across as vain, but fact is, no woman wants a scar. I mean, mm-hmm. if it's in a hidden place, perfect. But, I mean, for you, I'm marvelous.
Amazing. And I had the first one as well when you were still going through the leg.
Yeah.
And this is definitely the best. So
just give you the audience some input. Yeah. What we're talking about is the pulse. Where you feel the pulse on the wrist?
Yes.
That's the radial artery. So it's on the outer aspect of the soft side of your wrist, the inside of your wrist. There's a radial artery. And that gives, so we put a little needle in there and then pass a sheath. Of a small wire, and that sheath allows access to the arterial system, so we can get into any artery in the body from that point, which means that Audrey had a procedure two weeks ago,
and she's in the studio today.
Yeah, and so that tiny little mark on her arm is going to be gone in a couple of weeks. So it's really quite fresh now, but it looks like nothing. And it's great because we just pushed. There's no stitch, so we just put pressure on there, it stops bleeding, a little wrist bracelet, and that's it. So once we're in there, we pass little catheters and wires. So the catheter is a thin little tube, goes into an artery, and we direct that by x-ray. So we look at a map of the arteries that we create using x-ray and a dye. And then through that map, we pass little wires. The wires have a direction because they've got a curve on them. So we can turn them to the left or to the right or front or back. And we can, because of our knowledge of the anatomy, pass them into exactly the right artery and then inject the tiny little particles. When we're done, we just pull out the catheter and push on the artery on the wrist with this little wrist bracelet. Or you can even just push with your finger, and it stops bleeding, and that's it. There's no stitches, no scar. I mean, considering your experience that you've shared with everyone with your book, I mean, it's quite different.
And I mean, the beauty of it is that I'm discharged the following day.
Yeah,
just one overnight stay.
That's in America, amazing. It's not even overnight. Same day, go home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I love that. I wish more women had access to such. I mean, last night you spoke about some women being subsidized and only paying like 49 rands.
Yes. So it is available in government hospitals, but only at the very high level, tertiary level hospitals, Johannesburg Gen, Pretoria Academic, Baragwanath, and in Cape Town. You know, so in the centers where the skills exist. I have an appointment at Chorisky Hospital where I can teach radiologists and medical students that there is this procedure. I can teach radiologists how to perform the procedure so that we can expand the service. The cost of hospitals providing the service is coming down because they don't need super specialized cath labs. We can do it in less specialized labs, and we're trying to spread out. But as you say, the access is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of women in South Africa don't have access to medical aid. They rely on state hospitals. And so this really is an advocacy program where we can get government to realize it's a major public health issue, that they can have impact on, that they can put their money, our money, our tax money, behind a service that really is so much cheaper in the long run, gets women back to work quicker, don't have the risk. But it is, we acknowledge it's a long process. So the 49 Rand you're talking about is obviously for patients who don't have any income, that they don't have any income, and we do it for them. So I feel important that I contribute back. I give 20% one day a week to giving back. And that's what we do at Critics Care Hospital.
Oh, wow. I commend you for that.
Thank you.
Definitely. Oh, wow. I wish more medics would do what you're doing.
Well, there are. I know the ones that do, obviously, because we're doing in the hospital. And there are a lot to contribute. And to be honest, it's a great day. I mean, I get to teach and I get to show people cool stuff. And we do things with patients that are terribly, terribly desperate. And then I keep my skills up. And so it's my best day of the week.
Mm. I love that.
I like that as well.
So, Tanika, your experience with that at adenomyosis?
So, it was extremely painful. I just want to touch really quickly on the scarring portion, because I find that so amazing that, you know, Audrey will only have that little scar, because my myomectomy, I have a huge scar right below my belly button. And to speak about, you know, how we look in clothes and whether it's vain or not, I don't know. but it is something I think about all the time when I wear a bathing suit, when my dress is a little tighter than it probably should be. I think about that scar because I have keloid skin. So my scars puff up anytime I'm cut. So it's a huge, huge deal for me. So I think the advancement of UFE through the wrist is just amazing.
I think it's really shifting. I mean, so yeah, exactly. We've shifted quickly. I mean, Audrey, yeah. I saw 2016, January, we did procedure for her. And in July 2017, I changed everything because I feel a bit embarrassed. I couldn't offer it to her earlier. It was a few more days in hospital. She doesn't have a scar. We originally went in the top of the leg, right in the crease of the thigh, which again is a place we don't, you know, you won't see anything. She won't have any scar there. But the recovery is so much better because after procedure is quite sore. It feels like a very, very horrible period pain, a deep sort of pelvic pain. And you really want to just lie on your side and curl up in a ball and put maybe a cushion in your belly. You don't want to use a bedpan. You don't want, you know, you just want to walk to the toilet after. And that really allows you to do that. So I think that's been a huge shift in patient care that we can now offer patients radio access for uterine embolization.
Fantastic. So, I mean, you mentioned 2 years ago with the 27 fibros that were removed. So that was not the end, because yesterday you shared that you discovered furthermore 8, right?
Yes.
8 fibroids?
Yes.
So are you considering UFE with Dr. Gary before you go back to the US?
That would be incredible. Dr. Gary has been just so great in offering advice to my husband and I. And I'm really, you know, just grateful for him and grateful for this partnership, because as I tell women all the time, it's so, so important to get a second opinion, to get a third opinion. I have currently been advised that I probably need another myomectomy, right? So speaking with Dr. Gary, you know, he's told me that, you know, that may not be your only option.
Yes.
So it's just refreshing to hear that, because as women, I think one of the things that we do is that we're loyal to our doctors, right? And we're loyal to our doctors, our hairdressers. So I think that getting a second opinion, being able to share with other people what you're going through just to get different opinions, I think is the way to go. So I'm still, you know, conversing with him about my best options and whether I am a candidate for UFE. But I definitely want to maintain my fertility. So I have quite a few things to weigh.
Yeah, Tanika's got a complicated background, a complicated medical problem and set of problems. And it's not for everybody.
Right.
And that's, I think, an important thing. So I don't work independently. I work with a team. A team of gynecologists who I trust, who trust me, that we can say to a patient, look, let's first figure out what's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Okay, number one, let's make a diagnosis. And then let's give you all of your options so you can be fully informed. And that means that the choice you make is going to be the right choice, because it's the right one for you at that time. And that really is what this advocacy is about, is making women aware they have choice, there are options, there are people suffering the same thing as they are. You're not talking about your periods to your friends, which is, we're just discussing, it's kind of crazy. Look, I've never had a period in my life, but I never do. But the reality is, it's such a secretive experience that you're suffering every month with, and it's affecting your husbands, it's affecting your partners, it's affecting your children and your work, and you're not, in a way, you're just suffering silently. Mm-hmm. When someone who's very brave, I mean, Tanika is publicly sharing her most intimate experiences and her fears, which is incredibly brave. I mean, in a hugely public way, so other women, she gives of herself so that other women shouldn't suffer like she did or her mother did. And this is now bringing women out of the woodwork, right. And that's what we're trying to capacitate. And then we'll take you through a process. And the process might land up with with medication or just a hug or an operation. And it doesn't really matter, because the more women are out there, the more advocacy we can create, the better lives. And that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about quality of life.
Right.
So if we can improve people's quality of life, we're doing a good job.
Absolutely. Tanika, you also mentioned yesterday that you are the first woman in the entire U.S. to start an awareness initiative on fibroids. Mm-hmm. That is alarming, considering a population of 323 million.
Yeah.
Moreover, one study found that between 80 and 90% of African American women and 70% of white women will develop fibroids by the age of 50.
By the age of 50, yes.
So when you look at the numbers and when you look at the fact that you're the first advocate, I don't know if there's any more that have been formed after you started this initiative?
Yeah, so there are definitely other women who have joined on this campaign with me. And there have been research organizations regarding fibroids. But the first patient advocacy organization in the U.S., yes, I'm proud to say that I'm the first one to do so. And you're right, the stories are very similar and people are sharing their stories all over the country. However, with those numbers, anywhere else in the world, or I guess, yeah, anywhere else in the world, it would be an epidemic. People would be crying out. People would be marching. Anything that, you know, affected so many people. So I am just as surprised as you are that nothing has been done prior to this. But there has to be a first for everything. And we're excited about the work that we're doing to get women to advocate for themselves and to learn about fibroids. A lot of people still don't even know what fibroids are. You know, they can describe the symptoms of fibroids, but when you name it, they're not familiar with it. We still have people asking us, is it fibromyalgia or is it, you know, just things that have nothing to do with fibroids. So there's still a bit of education that needs to happen about what's happening with our bodies. What's a normal period? You know, as simple as that, what's a normal period? If my belly is protruding this way, you know, what does that mean? Heavy cramps and painful cramps, what does that mean? So that, like I said, there's a bit of education that still needs to happen, but we're excited about the work that we're doing and we're getting it started. So and it has snowballed a bit and people are realizing that, you know, anything that affects this many people needs to be talked about.
Kudos to you.
Thank you.
A woman filled with chutzpah. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So last night you launched the White Dress Project Africa. Am
yes.
I right?
Yeah.
Please share some of the conversations, discussions, and interactions. I mean, for example, there was a lady who spoke about the difficulty in finding a sensitive gynae, given her sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Would you like to share?
Yeah, that was a mind opener for me. I'm learning about this all the time. I mean, I've been a medical doctor for years, and she mentioned a few things. Well, one was language, and the other was she's in a same-sex lesbian relationship, and she was bleeding terribly, and she needed to go to a gynecologist. The first gynecologist she went to was very insensitive about her sexual orientation, which, okay, we can get that, or heads around that. We've still got a long way to go in that process of accepting people who are gay. But the next step, which really I had never considered, you know, a gynecologist examines you intimately. And they put a speculum inside of you. And she never had anything inside of her. And so now she's trying to get her head, and she used the word violated, which is a word like rape. I mean, it's the same. We have the same word, don't we? And so she's undergoing a medical test, which is we consider necessary as medical doctors. But she was being violated. So our insensitivity towards her journey just, you know, it took me aback. And I realized that when I'm referring patients come to me and they say they've got fibroids, and I say, okay, I'm not a gynae, I'm a radiologist, but I'll send you to my friend, the gynae. I've got to think carefully, which gynae? Someone who's sensitive to who they are. And that was my lesson over there. I mean, but as he says, it's just every day there's another, you know, a major issue. I mean, I'm off the topic. I mean, talking about clay eating.
Yes.
And this is something that really I only learned when you specifically ask about it. It's considered normal that, you know, thousands and thousands of women are stopping on the side of the road and they're buying potting clay, and because it smells very attractive. Their iron levels are so low that they're seeking iron from anywhere. They get almost no iron from the potting clay, but it's, the smell is very... And Tanika mentioned that soap.
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 As in soap that we use to wash?
Yes. Wow. Yes, bath soap. So I don't have the desire to eat it, but just the smell and the lather of it has appeased me in so many ways.
Ice is a big one.
Yeah, ice is another one. I eat ice all the time. And I've had 5 blood transfusions due to my iron deficiency. So yeah, I understand clay. I don't have the desire for clay as much, but when I smell it, I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
And it seems a bit less crazy than eating sand, right? Because it would be the same smell, the earthy smell. But at least clay is kind of smooth and it's kind of chocolatey and soft. Mm-hmm. So they're cutting it up into little blocks and eating it like potato chips. And I, you know, it doesn't solve their fibroid problem. You know, makes them feel a little bit happier for them. So when I say the word clay eating, it resonates. It resonates with thousands. When we talk about white dresses, it resonates. You understand intimately the shame of having a soiled white dress.
Right.
And that opens the conversation. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're learning through this process. As a medical doctor, I've got to, you know, there's a conversation outside of the medical space.
Right.
That's so important.
I mean, regarding clay eating, I grew up seeing pregnant women having it, and I thought that was just because of the hormones, the cravings that come with pregnancy.
Sure.
So it also happens with women who have fibroids.
It's the same effect. So what happens is women with fibroids have very, very heavy periods. So they can take in iron by you know, if their diet is good. Obviously, many women in South Africa have a very poor diet, very low nutrient diet. But if the diet is good, they can replace those iron stores. The problem is if the bleeding is too heavy, then they can't. They literally can't consume, or they'll take iron supplements, and then the side effects of that oral iron, like bad constipation, and so on, they won't want to take that iron. So now they're trying to keep up. It's like a bath. Okay, so you're pouring it in the top, but the drain is too wide. Mm-hmm. So what we got to do is you got to put a plug in there. Now we do that by surgery traditionally, or a hysterectomy, removing the uterus, which is inconceivable for a lot of women to think that, you know, a lot of women will go to gynae and they'll say, well, you've had 3 babies, why do you want a uterus? That doesn't make sense to me.
It's not as easy as that.
Yeah, right. Why are those two things related? You know, why should we have to take out something that's not necessary to take out? It was necessary, you know, 30 years ago when we didn't have another option, but now it isn't necessary. So what you can do is you can stop that bleeding. If you can stop it by the least invasive method possible, with the lowest risk, then it seems to be the right approach to me. Once you stop put the plug in it, if you use the analogy, then you can top up with iron and other, you know, vitamin B and EPO and all sorts of other things. But we can get on top of that. Suddenly you've got power. Mm-hmm. I mean, put Tanika, she's sitting at 1,600 meters right now, right? 1,400 meters, we're sitting at Johannesburg. And she comes from sea level, you know, in Atlanta, she can, you know, struggles to get up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not normal.
Right.
Well,
It's a lot.
It's complex, actually. Yeah. I mean, I get it why a lot of people do not want to be having these conversations, because it's actually overwhelming.
Right.
I mean, what was mind-boggling for me last night was former Miss South Africa Karishna Naika's story.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody out there doesn't believe in miracles, they just have to listen to a story. I mean, some of the things that she mentioned, I mean, was any of this, I mean, you knew about her experiences. I was hearing it for the first time yesterday when she shared that it actually came out in a magazine article. She was in a cover of a magazine that they had to do reprints, I think three sets of reprints, because there were so many women out there and still today that suffer from this, but they do not want to go out and talk publicly about what they're going through.
But you feel an obligation, as you have. So you, Sonia, have taken on, you know, you've had an incredible journey, and you had access to the best doctors, and you've, you know, you're educated, and you've got, you know, the internet, and it's all there, but you go through this whole crazy journey. Krishna had a similar, I mean, she's huge, you know, got an amazing network, and she was a director in Netcare. She could pick her doctors, and still they struggled to make the diagnosis, and then she suffered through it, and then eventually they managed to remove fibroid when she got pregnant and had a beautiful baby. But it was like a multi-year journey that she had to complete. And that's, I think, really what it's about is Googling. Doctor to Google is quite dangerous as well, because then you hear all these terrible stories and then you become an expert in something that you know nothing about. And that's also, you know, the flip side of the coin. But if we can have these awareness events where women ask their questions, they get to chat to a gynae. Often it's the first time they've actually really spoken to someone about these problems, not talking to their partners or their friends about it. Then they can have, start the healing process.
I mean, not only did she fall pregnant with a partial uterus,
right,
she carried the baby to full term.
Yeah, to term, absolutely.
Hence, I said it's a miracle. And talking about miracles.
That's Audrey. Right. I want to bring Audrey in here, because
Audrey, this is where you come in. And I remember Dr. Gary's post was Miracle Baby Zoe's Story. Mm. Please share.
I think my story is like probably like any other woman's story, but we're hearing it maybe for the first time. I was suffering from fibroids probably before I got diagnosed, but I just didn't know what it was. I got introduced to fibroids quite early. My mom suffered from fibroids. She had a hysterectomy because of it. And as a young girl, you know, I remember nursing her in bed and helping my dad without understanding what fibroids were up until I grew up and I started menstruating as well. And I just thought it was a heavy period. I thought, you know, my periods were terrible. I was always at work. At home, 2 days or 3 days a month, every single month, I would text my manager and tell him, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling too well. And my husband would come home and find me, you know, on the couch, in bed, in pain. And he was probably the only one that said to me in the very beginning, you need to get this checked out. This is not normal. You shouldn't be having, I mean, as a guy, you could see that this should not be happening. And so, you know, when I fell pregnant in 2014 for the first time and I had miscarriage, and, you know, I just sort of thought, okay, you know what, I need to try again. And I did. And I had another miscarriage. And I think the gynecologists that I was seeing also at that time were not sensitive to the fact that I had, you know, I now had these fibroids. I remember the first gynecologist that I saw told me point blank, you will not be able to carry with the fibroids that you have right now. Mm-hmm. And I was on her bed and she had just realized that the fetus had no heartbeat. And instead of being sensitive to that, she was there telling me, you need to get these taken out. It's never going to happen. And, you know, the second gynecologist that I saw was pretty much the same thing up until I got in touch with Dr. Gary, and he sent me to Dr. Lukaimani, and she changed my perspective on fibroids. And she said, no, it's not that you will not carry or you can't have a baby, you can, but these are the complications that will come with it. And she educated me, and my conversation with her made me understand what I was suffering with and what steps needed to be taken. That's when I went for my first procedure with Dr. Gary in January last year.
So Audrey had terrible fibroid disease. I mean, lots and lots and lots of, I mean, just try and describe it. balls of muscle and fibrous tissue that become like a whirl, like a tennis ball, or golf ball, or smaller. And they're various sizes. And they within the muscle of the uterus, sometimes they're in the cavity where the baby forms, sometimes on the outer surface. But they form this tissue, and what they do is they kind of so they cause a geographic or a blockage because they're a large ball that where the baby should be, but they also draw blood into them, mm-hmm. so that any developing fetus is competing for blood with the fibroid. So the problem in Audrey's case was there were so many that taking them out physically would leave her with no viable uterus, and that's what the first gynecologists were saying. Mm-hmm. They were saying, look, if we attack these things, you may be left with nothing. And then you won't have a uterus, and then you'll never have a child. So, and the reason for that is, you know, if she's bleeding in that procedure, they're going to choose her over the uterus. So we've got to save your life, therefore you lose the uterus. And that was unthinkable. So she went through this long journey and two pregnancies that she lost because of the fibroids. We referred her to a great gynae. I mean, Abigail Lukamani is super smart at Four Ways. And then the journey really started. So now we could offer her something that didn't. So the embolization, which blocks the arteries to those fibroids, the fibroids shrunk. It took a little bit of time. They shrunk. And then...
No, for pregnant in pregnant. September. Yeah, September
now,
last year.
You thought you'd lose that baby, like you'd lost the two. Yeah. So she went through 9 months of hell. Mm. You know, checking is the baby okay? And then the fibroids also tend to grow a little bit in pregnancy. So she went through that process. And she delivered absolutely normally, a healthy little baby.
Yeah.
Mm. Beautiful.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
I saw yesterday. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And this is the message. Now, traditionally on the internet, if you look up fibroids pregnancy, they say, don't have an embolization if you want to fall pregnant. Mm. And that's not fair. Because then what do? You have a hysterectomy. No, that's crazy. So why should you have a hysterectomy? You know, there are cases when it's better to do a myomectomy. So this isn't a catch-all. Mm-hmm. But don't go straight for the hysterectomy. Cases when you need a hysterectomy too. I mean, if there's a cancer or you're bleeding or so, there are good reasons for a hysterectomy. I'm not knocking hysterectomy, but that isn't the go-to default option if you've got bad fibroid disease. And that's a message we're trying to get out there. And pregnancy, so, and we hear this over and over again, and you'll hear this on the internet where women who are told that you'll never get pregnant have an embolization and get pregnant.
I think that's what we need to sort of change amongst ourselves to say, you know, you can fall pregnant, you can have a baby, but there's another option now with the embolization. You know,
absolutely.
It doesn't end there. Even with the myomectomy, I mean, I had myomectomy and an embolization 2 weeks ago.
That's what you needed. So,
and that's what I needed. Yeah.
Yep. So
I didn't need a hysterectomy.
Oh, I'm happy for you that you had those options available. With me, it was different because not only did I have fibroids in 2015, I also had a burst cyst, and it made it a lot more complicated.
Absolutely.
And the pain was from Lucifer.
And the exactly. So the embolization would not have worked on the cyst. You had a complex set of problems. That wouldn't have helped. And so we got to evaluate absolutely each case and give women the information. Tell them what's going on. These are your options. Let them make the decision.
Absolutely. And getting second, third, fourth opinion if you can afford to.
And just a vote. Sorry, just to mention the medical aids in South Africa, we always have a go at them and we always hate them and never give us anything when we need. Actually, they support this. And it's not necessarily cheaper. But they understand that they have to do best practice. So all the big medical aids and even almost all the small ones are funding it completely, which I think is a great vote. Mm-hmm. They're not going for the old treatments. They're saying, look, this is something we have to do and we'll pay for it.
You're right. I mean, because if you don't have medical aid, the lady yesterday spoke about spending $100,000 as a private patient.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
She said she had to do away with her car in order to pay for this op.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, not many people can afford medical aid. It's probably, 20% of the population?
Or even less,
Less than that.
That's right.
Please tell us more about the partnership between the Fibroid Treatment Clinic and the White Dress Project.
So, I am so excited, as I mentioned before, to be here and be in South Africa and to start this partnership with the Fibroid Treatment Clinic. So when we had the opportunity to come, you know, Dr. Gary and I spoke, and I told him that, you know, it was really important for me to come here and see if the idea that I had in the United States would be relevant here and would be impactful here. And just hearing the stories from last night, it's like we're neighbors, you know, we're millions of miles apart. However, the stories are so similar. We're sharing in the same experiences with having this epidemic. So that's really what I wanted to come in and do, to fact find, to get to know Dr. Gary, for him to get to know me, to see my vision for the organization, his vision for helping women. And I think that we've done that. So we're excited about you know, the options that we have now to roll this out in the country and to get women to be their own health advocate. I keep saying that, but it's so, so important because it's just the best message that we can give. So I think that we've accomplished, you know, what I came for, which is to see the impact that it could have here and the relevance. So I'm excited about the work that we're going to do in the future.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I this is fantastic for us because, you know, it's talking to women or talking to the media or, you know, saying, I'm Dr. Gary and I'd like to talk to you about fibroids is one way of doing it. And when you've got something as impactful as what Tanique has created, that's a whole different conversation. We see it as much larger than South Africa. I mean, it's an African problem. We've seen women from all over Africa coming for treatments at our clinic. This is... It's a huge public health issue, but then we can go into governments and we can help them with the solution. We can, you know, train doctors. We can offer treatments so that we can. It's a holistic approach to what we're trying to do, and through the White Dress Project, we can start the conversation.
I'm glad. And, you know, Dr. Gary, you also have a personal reason why this is close to heart or yeah. why it's become a passion of yours, if you don't mind.
Yeah, how did I land up here? That's a very good question. So I started, I became a doctor and then I became a radiologist. And there's a special field within radiology, which is called interventional radiology. And it's what you alluded to, which is effectively just doing operations, but through tiny little holes in the skin. Using radiology. So radiology is medical imaging. And it might be using x-rays or magnetic fields or radio fields to see what's going on inside the body. Attempting to do what would have been a big open operation, something would be an impossible, possible through a different approach. So I went to this field and it's huge. I mean, we were doing livers and spleens and kidneys and, you know, gallbladders and all sorts of stuff. And I did a lot of my training at Barry Gwynedd. Chris Honey Baragwanath, I call Paradise, because that's where we did like some amazing stuff. So I learned a whole branch of procedures, and then I caught on that there was this massive group of women that aren't being treated particularly well, and maybe I can do a little bit better. So that I didn't invent the procedure; it was invented 25 years ago by guys in France, subsequently perfected in the States and Europe and whatever. So we just copying what they're doing. We're just translating it into our African experience. So we were doing it at Chris Hani Baragwanath. My mother had fibroids. My mother had a hysterectomy when I was 13 or 14 years old because of bad fibroid disease. And she was in bed for, you know, recovering for 6 weeks. And I remember that vividly. That was her only option. She'd had three children by then. So her family was complete. But for her, it was a very defeminizing experience. She lost her womb. She's a very maternal person, and she lost her womb. Now, that it wasn't an option for her then, but I realized that I had a skill, and we could get it out there.
You know, for me, getting involved in this initiative and awareness campaign is a no-brainer. Mm. As I alluded earlier on, in 2015, I had four fibroids removed, and it was made more complex, as I said, by the burst cyst, which meant I needed to go, you know, to theater pronto. And so I had a myomectomy. And I suffered severe complications, and 3 days later, I had to be operated on again. Mm. The day before, I was meant to be discharged from hospital, and this landed me in ICU, which is why I wrote the book. So how can I get involved? How can women get involved out there?
So this is absolutely what we're exploring. We're starting White Dress Project Africa. It's going to have multiple events in the media. It's going to be publicized, fibroids.co.za, White Dress Project United States, through Facebook, Fibroid Treatment Clinic on Facebook. We're going to start that conversation. We're going to evolve that. I mean, we're going to get women like yourself who have media profile involved, who have a personal interest. And all of us have a network. To push forward. The White Dress Project, yes, has a large experience in advocacy. They've created legislation in the States. We'd love to do that. So they've got something called Fibroid Awareness Month, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yes, July.
In July. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've set as a target, maybe we can have a Fibroids Awareness Month in South Africa. What would that mean? What would that create for women? Would government be interested? Do they see the point? And so we got a crazy target. Let's do it. And how do we do it? And can that create awareness? Change people's lives for the better.
And let's not forget mobile units, for example, for remote areas. Like yes. I said, you know, you find hard to reach places where ladies have no information, no internet access, no library whatsoever. And most women have actually never seen a gynecologist. They've right. never had a consultation. They've never had a pap smear in their lives.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully, you know, the partners and the sponsors can consider that, because you hear a lot of women who say, when are you coming to Kwaghamstad?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, and that's not that hard. I mean, it's conceptually, it's a large ask, but to be quite honest, we've got the network. So for I know the guy that already has mobile ultrasound units out there in rural areas, being paid by government to do ultrasounds. So it's not that we have to go to government to say, look, can you finance us to do this? It's just getting those connections together.
Right.
That we can make that diagnosis, that we can have awareness campaign in this tiny little village, that all the women can line up and get an ultrasound. We now know these women have fibroids. Okay, what are we going to do with them?
Right.
We're going to get them to the next level hospital that they can have an assessment and then a plan.
And that's so important for me, to have women like you who are influencers in this region and across the world, to be able to share your story and to have women relate to you. I think that is so, so powerful. And that is really the niche that we found with the White Dress Project, is sharing stories. Like, doctors are great, and obviously they have the expertise. But when you and I can talk about the fact that we haven't worn a white dress in 10 years for the fact that we both have fibroids, it's impactful. And now you are my sister, you know? So we have that connection, and my story resonates with you and yours with me. So I think it's so important to tell those stories and to have women like you share yours as well. Because I am now, I feel so much closer to you because we share that experience. And I know what you've gone through. I know the pain that you've felt. So I think we can't belittle how important sharing our experiences are. Even though we're miles apart, we're together.
I love that the White Dress Project has a pledge. Please share.
Yes. So our pledge is so important to us. We have it on our website. I should have had it memorized, right? But... But it's so important to us, and it's just another layer of...
I wear white, I remember.
Do you?
I wear white for my mother.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I wear... Well, there's an extended version,
yes,
which
yes.
is what I think you're
which
talking
about. Which is on your website.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, which is what I think you're talking about. So it's just another layer to bind us together, to unify us, and to say that we're all in this together and we're sisters together. And not only sisters, but we're a family together. You
yes.
know, my husband has been so supportive, and I'm sure that, you know, your partners have
been.
Oh, that's
such an important point you bring up here. So
right?
I was saying the other day that half the inquiries we get are from men. And Audrey's own story, her journey ended when her husband heard me on the radio and took it upon himself to help her.
Yeah, he called me.
And he said, this is what you need to do. And I think there's a huge 50-50 here. You know, it's a women's health issue, but men are the ones who are really suffering over here.
Yeah.
And they want to find a solution. They're solution driven. And I mean, Tanika's husband, James, is hugely supportive. He's at all of her white dress events. He's sitting there back, just wondering when they're going to end.
Right. Yeah. But so supportive, because he knows when I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm going in the bathroom and coming out with a towel on the bed. So, you know, it he experiences it as well. So I think it's important to include all of our family members.
Well, thank you so much for spending your time with me, Audrey,
Tanika,
and
Dr. Gary. I mean, to your husband, James, and to your husband as
Roddy,
well,
yeah.
Audrey. Rodney?
Roddy, yeah.
I think it makes life so much easier when we have supportive partners, because no woman should have to
go through
it. Yes.
He's really suffering because I'm running around doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. For the greater good, and I know she understands that. My humble opinion, after all, this is the opinion booth. Women need to have these conversations. I don't understand why it's still taboo for us to talk about fibroids, considering that it is the year 2017. I don't understand why we shy away from talking about our personal experiences. We often talk about sisterhood. We talk about frivolous things such as the latest handbag and shoes, but we shy away from talking about our vagina and issues centered around it. Fibroids are not STIs. Mm-hmm. They are not. Let's talk about them. There's nothing taboo about fibroids. Moreover, we as women need all the support we can get, especially from our partners. They should be encouraged to accompany us for gynae visits, not just for pregnancy ultrasounds. A partner that is well informed makes a better lover and a better nurse. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
This is CliffCentral.com.